Did you see that NASA discovered another planet that's like 7 times bigger than Earth? Basically, what is that about? That's insane. How are we not all talking about that? Screw Mars. Yeah, like, let's go there. What are we doing?
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, here we go. Another episode of Story and Craft. Glad to have you back. I'm Mark Preston. If this is your first time, welcome. Glad to have you here. And of course, if you've been a longtime listener, you know, took a little hiatus, a few weeks off, did the big move, now residing home and studio right at the beach at South Padre Island, Texas. You know, trying to do that Jimmy Buffett lifestyle. Been a goal of mine. I guess we're doing it now. My youngest daughter, Emma, is here with me. She's doing her gap year and working as a bartender. 18 years old, working at a beach bar during spring break, which is going on right now. Reminds me, I'm not a kid anymore. It is kind of cool to watch, so that's what I'm up to this weekend. But enough about what I got going on. We are back, episodes galore, about to roll out, and today we are speaking with the very lovely, the very talented Anya Savchich. She is so incredibly talented, very fun to talk to as well. Loudermilk, you might know her from the Netflix series along with Ron Livingston, their roommates. She was also on the ABC show Big Sky. New movie she's in right now is called Ricky Stenicki. She's in there along with Andrew Santino, John Cena, Zac Efron, Jermaine Fowler. Cool dude. Talked to him just not very long ago. It's a great movie. Prime Video. Funny, funny stuff. It's out right now. You can check it out. And of course, I want to remind you, everything Story and Craft you could possibly want to know, just go to storyandcraftpod.com. Okay. Hey, and by the way, a little request, if you would, whether you're listening on Spotify or any one of the other platforms out there, YouTube as well, make sure to like, follow, heck, leave a review. Just really jazzed to have you here. And of course, just want you to get notified every time we have a new episode coming out. Great episodes coming up. I think you'll have a lot of fun checking them out. But let's get after it. Let's jump in and have a nice conversation. Really enjoyed it. Today is Anya Savchich Day right here on Story and Craft. How are you doing this afternoon? Anything good going on?
I'm doing great. Not much. Preparing for the Ricky Stenicki premiere, which I'm really excited about. So just figuring out looks for that.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because you got to do the red carpet thing and yeah, you got to make sure. Yeah,
that's gotcha. Right. Yeah, it's always fun, but it's always a little stressful, too.
Well, is this something you decide yourself? Because if I was doing this, I'd be like, I got to hire somebody. Like, listen, this needs help, you know?
Totally. I mean, you can hire someone, but it's still up to you, you know? So there's always that little bit of pressure, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
Now, when is the premiere going to be?
Our premiere is March 5th.
Okay, it's my oldest daughter's birthday. She turns 21, so I'm going to have a 21-year-old. So still getting my head around that idea.
Oh, my God.
I know it's weird.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's fun.
It's so funny. It's the youngest one is the one who's excited to turn 21 because I can drink.
Yeah.
Now, do you live in Los Angeles right now?
Right now, I'm actually in Vancouver, BC, in Canada.
Okay. So you still call mm-hmm. Canada home.
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, my family's here. I grew up here. My friends. So it's definitely my home.
But this last year, I just kind of checked, you've been like really busy. Do you have that sense yourself that you've been running a lot, or has it actually been pretty easily managed?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes we film projects and then they come out so much later. So even when I think of Ricky Stenicki coming out, that was a year ago that we filmed this movie. So it feels like a year ago I was really busy. And of course, I've been busy since, but it's always waiting for the projects to come out. That's always the most exciting part, I think. So now feels like an exciting time. Yeah.
Yeah, I was speaking with somebody the other day, and I said, definitely don't have some monster resume, but I always thought it was easy. You go in, if you're an actor, you go do your thing and leave, but being a director, though, you're married to a project for like a year, and the actor folk got it easy.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I've talked to a lot of actor friends about if they're interested in directing, and when I worked on Loudermilk with Ron Livingston, I was like, would you ever direct? Is that something you're interested in? And he said, oh, God, no. Like, I just want to come to work and then leave and then have them figure out the rest. And I thought, yeah, I mean, it's true. When you're acting, you have that ability just to jump in and then jump right out.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I do have to apologize. We literally just moved in not too long ago. So if you see some boxes just outside of frame, that's us still getting unpacked in our new digs. So
no worries. Where did you move?
A little place called South Padre Island, Texas, which is on the very tip of the South Texas coast. If you're a space nerd and watch the whole SpaceX thing, that's about that's 7 miles south of me across the bay. That's where they launch the rockets. So it's so we're getting all excited. They got one going up here soon. So
really,
but yeah, everybody goes down. There is a little inlet to get to the bay, and everybody stands there and just kind of I think it's exactly three or five miles. I'm not quite sure from where it seems closer, but I see they were stacking the rocket the other day, so it's kind of neat. My inner nerd is flexing right now.
That is so cool. I would love to go up to space. Be terrifying, but it would be really cool.
Yeah, there are days when I just like get me out of here for just a few minutes. But I was curious as far as the origin story, kind of, you know, Canada growing up there. When did you make your way down here? Or actually, let me kind of even rewind back further. Was this acting thing, was it always part of your DNA? You were always doing something? Were you a theater kid, or this kind of come later on in life?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start further back. So I was born in Bosnia, which was Yugoslavia at the time. And my family moved to Canada when I was around 3. So we lived in Calgary, which is in Alberta, kind of more like a cowboy type of province.
Familiar with it, yeah. I'm a native Texan, so I'm all familiar with the Calgary folk, yeah.
Exactly. Very similar. It's like the Texas of Canada, basically. So we lived there until I was about 10. And I remember I took my first drama class actually in junior high. And I remember the teacher just saying to me, you know, you're not bad at this. And I remember that stuck in my head. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay. And then when I moved to Vancouver with my family in grade 8, I started taking drama class. And I just kept taking it every year. And it was the same teacher and the same kids pretty much cycling through. And I just really loved it. It felt like a break from my day and a time to just kind of be silly and relax. And so I just started to love it. And then eventually I kind of ended up getting an agent, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. And I started auditioning and, you know, slowly building my resume.
Was there a lot of stuff shooting? Because I know Vancouver, there's a lot of stuff shooting up there.
Yeah.
But what about where you were growing up? Were there many on-camera opportunities, or were you looking more at like theater and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was most interested in film and TV because I just loved to watch it. I was a huge fan of Degrassi when I was younger.
Oh, okay.
And it was something I was like obsessed with because it was Canadian and it was international. And I thought, how cool that all these kids get to hang out together and pretend they're going to high school with each other. And yeah, that was sort of a big thing for me. And then what was the question? I got lost.
No, we're just kind of talking about kind of where you came from and the Degrassi thing. That's interesting.
Yeah,
what else were you watching? What was there anything else that besides that was like actors that were you like, oh my God, they just kind of lit your fire?
Oh, I loved all the teen stuff when I was in high school, obviously, because I was a teen. So like the OC or the 90210 spinoff, like that stuff had me hooked. I was just like, this is the drama that I need, you know? Not to mention everyone in those shows is like 30 playing, you know, 17. So I'm like, where are all these men in my life?
I know. I was just pointing that out to my daughter the other day. We were watching something. Oh, we were watching Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. That was what it was. You know, we were going back. It was that came out in 91, 92, somewhere around there. And, you know, just you're looking like they're definitely not a teenager. Like, why are they trying to pass them off? But that was kind of the way things were back in the day.
It's amazing. Totally, totally. And I kind of get it. I mean, it's like appealing to younger people, I think, to look at older people. Like, we're always looking up to the older kids. So it makes sense. I can see where it gains more viewers, but it's definitely confusing when you're watching it at that age, comparing yourself.
Well, it's funny. You know, you mentioned the Canada thing and stuff on TV. I remember being in elementary, junior high, and it seemed like all the educational programming that we watched, you know, I'm old enough to remember when the teacher would wheel in the media cart into the room, you know, and TV and the VCR.
Oh, God, yeah, of course. Me too.
I remember the 16 millimeter projector, but that's really going back. But all those things seem to be produced in Canada. And so I had this like kind of view of like there was a lot of educational programming apparently getting produced in your neck of the woods. Whenever I think Canada and actor, I always think comedy, you know, like John Candy and all that.
Really?
I always think, you know, like Mike Myers or whatever.
Sure. Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. The OGs. Yeah. That when you were coming up, was there a desire? Because, you look at Loudermilk, would you say the comedy was on the agenda, or were you wanting to kind of go more the drama OC route? Was there a desire early on?
Oh, man. I've always loved comedy. It's definitely my favorite genre. And I think what I love about it the most is that people watch it all the time. Like when people talk to me about Loudermilk, they're like, oh, I'm watching it for the third time. And I just think, how cool is that? Yeah, I mean, it's so cool when you watch something funny, you love how it makes you feel. So you want to keep watching it. Where sometimes you watch things that make you feel really, really gross inside, but they're so good, but you're never going to watch them again. You know, like I think of Requiem for a Dream or something.
Yeah, that's kind of a heavy one.
I loved that movie, but I'm never watching that movie again. There's no way. That's like a one-time deal.
Yeah, I hear people talking about that in interviews and stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it props. It was a solid movie. I can't watch it again. It's too much. It's a little much. You know, it's pretty intense, I guess, a better way of putting it.
Yeah, it's very dark. But I think that's why comedy really stands out for me, is the watchability of it, the rewatchability of it is just so exciting. And I love that it makes people happy. So I was always drawn to it, definitely.
Well, I have to say, you are the reason why I watch Loudermilk. I'm a season and a half in right now, I believe. And
nice.
And I remember it because the publicity photos they had you wearing a CPAP thing. I'm like, I just got to watch this. I got to figure out why they chose to use this graphic to promote the show, you know, and it revealed itself. Plus also, you know, I'm going back in time, big Ron Livingston fan. I mean, that had to be
he's the best.
Now you had to have seen Office Space. Tell me you've seen Office Space.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Multiple times. Of course.
I've tried to get my kids to watch it. I grew up in Dallas and they shot it there, and it was so indicative. It was a time capsule. It was such a good time capsule of that time. People going, working in cubicles, and and even at the opening scene, when he's driving down the highway and he can't get in the right lane. I don't know how much you remember.
Oh yeah, that's so good. Of course, I remember that.
That's LBJ. I used to drive that to get to the radio station where I worked, and I was like, God, this is such a like perfect time cap. And that's a movie that I'll watch once a year probably. You know, they're those movies you got to catch them like once a year. Yeah. But I have to ask though. I mean, the Ron Livingston thing, is how close to character is he? Because I've throughout the arc of his career. He can do different things, don't get me wrong, but Ron Livingston always shows up. I was just kind of, as a quasi-fanboy of that old movie, I was curious. Mm-hmm.
He's a lovely, kind, humble person. I wouldn't say he's like Loudermilk. He definitely keeps his opinions more to himself,
yeah.
much more than the character. He's a friendly person who I would say he's very work oriented, so he is more private but still kind and giving, and he's taught me a lot about acting and film, and he's technically such an incredible actor also, so he always knows like where to turn and where the light is and how to move on camera, so I learned a lot about that from him. And he's just always so present. There's a reason that he's such an indie icon. And I'm just so glad that Loudermilk has popped off the way it has, because I think he deserves that lead role, you know, and to really be known for something.
Yeah, it's not really what you call a sleeper. I don't know what you call it, but it's not something that was heavily promoted that I can recall. I just kept seeing the little icon pop up on Netflix. I was like, I'll check it out. I was working on my laptop. I'm like, I don't know how many up. I think I did a season in a day or so, or like a day and a half, you know, something like that.
Nice.
No. It was a couple awesome days. I went through it. It was, but also Will Sasso, whenever I see him show up in something, he's always just one of those guys, like you just kind of want to watch him, his facial expressions. So I can name a handful of things. He was one of those guys that when he shows up in a scene, you know, it's going to get interesting. And I got to know, when you were first presented Loudermilk, did you kind of like, oh yeah, I'm going to jump in? Or did you kind of, did it take you a moment before you kind of isolated what it was about and if you wanted to take part in it?
I mean, I right away wanted to be a part of it because Ron and Will are comedy legends. And then you have Peter Farrelly, who's obviously a, you know, Hollywood A-list director in my eyes. He's created so many careers. He's created an entire new subsect of comedy, I would argue. So I knew I wanted to be a part of it.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Plus, also, I remember I had a chance to audition for him once or twice.
Oh, yeah.
For the movie The Green Book. And he brought me back in, and I was like, oh, yeah. You know, those callbacks, they feel good because you feel like you've almost booked it. You know, you get a callback.
Of course.
And he was looking, and it was the longest audition I think I've ever done. It was about almost shy of 10 minutes, which is... But he said, listen, I just don't see you for this character. I was going to say, thanks so much. Ugh. Just a chance to audition for the guy that directed, you know, something about Mary. I mean, come on, you know. But he said, hands me some sides. The script, go in the hall. I want you to work on this character. I was like, ooh, you see me for another character. I'm saying this internally, you know. And then and I usually don't get a lot of nerves in auditions, but that's one of the first times I got nerves. It's like, ooh, wait a minute. But they ended up not casting me and won an Academy Award. And that's kind of the thing. If you don't cast me, the last one was Dallas Buyers Club, I remember. I got really close to getting in.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's sort of like, you know, don't cast me. Bring me in for a callback. Don't cast me. You'll get an Academy Award.
Right. Oh, my God. You should tell everybody.
But that wasn't really a funny movie, obviously. There were some comedic notes to it.
Yeah.
But he kind of floats back and forth. Has he directed any episodes of Louder Milk?
He was a co-creator with Bobby Mort. So him and Peter did the series together, wrote a lot of it together. And Peter directed the full first season. And then for the second and third, Peter and Bobby Farrelly shared the load. So it was a bit of both of them.
That is very cool.
Totally. And what's so cool about them as brothers is they're very different, but they have the exact same viewpoints on pretty much everything. So it was basically like Peter was there when Bobby was there. So I think that's why the show feels very cohesive.
Yeah, it does. It does. Because, you know, working in TV, you have a different director every episode a lot of times.
Exactly.
You know? So that's kind of a gift to have the same guy every episode.
Yeah, that's nice.
What I'm curious about, that's a great ensemble. It's fun. I enjoy it. I mean, I'm glad I'm only a season and a half in because I still got more to enjoy for the first time. But
that's awesome.
Ricky Stanicki, is that how they say? Or Stanicki, right?
Ricky Stanicki, yeah.
That's another real interesting ensemble. How did that project kind of materialize for you?
Yeah. Well, I know they've been trying to make that movie for like 10 years and they had a lot of different people attached. I think Jim Carrey at one point was meant to play Ricky Stanicki. And then I guess finally the funding came through and they were able to make it. And it came through. I mean, I've known Peter for so long now with working on Louder Milk, and I've auditioned for some of his other projects as well. And this one just kind of felt like the right fit. And it was also a really exciting opportunity. We shot this in Australia, in Melbourne.
Oh, really?
So it was, that was a really cool aspect of the project. I had never been there. And traveling for work is always fun, especially for a movie where it's a shorter shoot. So it's not like you're there for a whole year or, you know, 6 months or something. So that really drew me in as well. So... yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a great ensemble. There was lots of time to bond. No one could leave because it was so far away from anything. So on the weekends, we all got to hang out and, you know, get to know each other. And I think that made it really special.
Yeah, my daughter is doing her gap year between, she graduated early from high school and she's going to go to college in the fall. But she's doing her gap year and just kind of hanging out with me. I said, you know, I've always wanted to do... kind of be an expat for like a year or two. And Melbourne's the destination where I want to go. To go down there without having, it was just, you know, me being self-employed. It was just a little bit too much stuff to get put together to make it happen. There's also a cost factor of shipping everything because I've got a recording studio. I've got to get it all down to Australia. I said, let's just go next to the beach. But Melbourne, and that's kind of a, I don't want to say, is it, am I right in saying it's kind of artsy? Not artsy, but it's sort of, it's definitely, I kind of liken it to, the arts are part of the ecosystem. Is that right?
Totally. It's a very bustling city. People are super social. There's lots of art everywhere. The architecture is amazing. They have like a lot of old and new things, but everything really melds nicely. And I think we all fell in love with it when we were there. Everyone had a moment where they were kind of like, damn, like I'd love to live here. Yeah. It's just so far away. So far away from everything. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe Australia is a little underrated.
Maybe Australians like that, so not everybody comes down there.
And I think they might. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could think about when I thought of Australia was all the spiders and snakes and all that stuff. But honestly, being in a city, that's not really as big of a deal. So I didn't really worry about that.
Well, I forgot that Peter Farrelly directed that as well. So it must have been kind of nice. You're like, yes, we're old friends. You know, you had that shorthand. You know, you roll into that. Pardon my ignorance on the timeline here, but you were already doing Loudermilk before they went into production on Ricky Stenicki, correct?
Totally. We had already wrapped Loudermilk. Yeah, it had been a couple years since we'd finished our last season. And he called me and I got that part and got to see him again. And it just felt right away like old times. You know, he is such a friendly guy and he's so easy to get along with and collaborate with. And what's so cool is he's also a really loyal person. If he likes you and he likes working with you, he wants to work with you again. So it was just nice to be back and feel so welcomed. And, you know, I came in a week after they'd already started shooting, but everyone already knew who I was because he'd already told them that I was coming and that, you know, I was great and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, that's so sweet. So, yeah, it was just a lovely shoot, and I love working with him.
I'm curious how they ended up in Australia, though. Was it without giving anything away, was Australia part of the story, or it just happened to be that was a location that worked for him?
It has absolutely nothing to do with the story. I think it was a tax break situation. I think it was just cheaper to shoot there. And I think also people wanted to be somewhere where it was sunny and nice, and it was summertime in Australia, so you know, we got to enjoy that. And
well, was it summer for them or was it summer?
It was summer in Australia.
Okay. So it would be winter for us. That thing always kind of, they talk about Christmas down there being warm, which is so weird.
I can't imagine.
But John Cena, he plays Ricky Stenicki, correct? In this?
That's right. Yeah. Yes, he does. Yeah.
And I was just looking at Jermaine Fowler's in this. I had a chance to chat with him just a few weeks ago, actually. So he seems like such a cool dude. Very cool dude.
He's a great guy. Yeah, he's a great guy. Super funny, too. Just awesome comedian.
So how long were you down in Australia for in total?
So I think for me it was about 5 weeks. And I really enjoyed it. I loved working with everyone in the cast. In the movie, I play Andrew Santino's wife. And I'm like heavily pregnant in it, and he misses the birth of the baby. And that's kind of when they start realizing that they need to bring in Ricky Stenicki so that they can prove that they have this friend. And that was all really fun. Just the unraveling of the story it reminds me a lot of like the more 2000s older Farrelly Brothers stuff where it's kind of a simple premise and the fun is in the silliness of it.
Yeah,
the
situation just gets progressively more absurd as they go along. Yeah,
exactly. And I feel like that kind of comedy is missing now. You know, everything. I feel like comedy now is just wrapped into every genre instead of just being standalone. And I like that this is just a standalone, funny, silly story you can relax to.
You know, thank you for saying that. Yeah, my daughter and I were going through trying to find on the different streamers, trying to find just a comedy like circa late 90s, maybe. You know, like a good example is Judd Apatow. Anything he did, it was just, you kind of buy into the absurdity of it. It's just kind of fun, like Anchorman or something like that. But there aren't really, right. There seems to be, and this is maybe just my opinion, just kind of a shortage of good, fun, quasi goofy comedies that you can kind of disappear for a couple hours. You know, this is kind of my thing.
Absolutely. Something you can just have on. You can turn on again and again and again and just rewatch and laugh at. So I think that'll be this. And I really hope it does well and people enjoy it because it's silly and fun. And yeah, I love it.
I forgot to ask you, would your parents in the arts at all? Or were they in any kind of performance or anything like that?
No. My parents were never really into the arts. My grandma had like a brother that was a playwright and a theater director. And so she always says that, oh, you pulled from this brother I had, you know, but no one else in my family is really that artsy. I think I have like a distant uncle that's a painter, but that's kind of where it ends. So yeah, I don't know where it came from.
Well, it's good that you kind of have that thing. It's your own thing, but also a lot of folks don't
totally
get it. You know, were your parents down with it? Like, were they saying, really, acting? Or were they like, hey, go for it? You know, did they have an opinion either way on it?
It was tricky. I think they were excited for me because I knew what I enjoyed. But at the same time, they were worried that, you know, I wasn't going to make enough money and that I wouldn't be able to make a living. And of course, I think that's every parent's fear that, you know, you can't hold your own. But, you know, I went to school. I went to university. I studied English and business. And I thought, you know, one day I'll get a more regular office type job. And after I finished school, I thought, okay, I'll do acting for another year and I'll see what happens. And then, you know, if it's not working out, I'll maybe find some other ways. And I booked Loudermilk. So from there, I kind of just kept going and I haven't jumped to the plan B yet. So hopefully never.
Well, I've talked to so many people that said something to the effect of, if you can see yourself doing anything else, you know, realistically,
yeah,
this probably isn't for you. And I think that's a lot of the folks who do this. This is in their DNA. They got to do it.
Yeah.
You found something you're passionate about. And I love, you know, Loudermilk for me was a pleasant surprise. I did not know. It's one of those things you walk into, I have no idea about anything, what to expect. But of course, being in recovery is a big, big theme naturally in this. Did you do any preparation for that by going and attending any meetings? How did you prepare for to play this character?
Yeah, I did a lot of research. First of all, I have people in my life that have dealt with substance abuse in different ways. So talking to them was probably the most eye-opening and interesting way to learn. And then I watched a lot of stuff on YouTube that I found. There was like some very interesting docs about addiction. I mean, even just watching, what's that show, the really popular one where people are trying to get off drugs?
Oh, is it like a reality show or?
Yes, yes, yes. It's very dark. Anyway, I watched a bunch of that and I just sort of tried to put myself in her shoes, just reading the script and you know, being on set and asking questions and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think there's all kinds of ways to find your character, and especially with a topic this difficult. I think addictions are also prevalent in other aspects of life too. Like for me, it's not so much substances, but you know, there's other things that maybe we deal with, that, you know, repeated behaviors or whatever that we're trying to curb. And it's like, I get it. So that was a really interesting aspect of the show, and I'm so glad that so many people connected to it, because obviously it's a big point.
Yeah, and I think
show.
It was handled very well. I don't think it was meant to be cuted up. Is that a word? I don't know. In any way, I mean, there was some humor that was in there, but kind of like you had
totally.
People in your life. Now, I didn't have anybody that I was aware of necessarily in my life, but I came up as a young kid starting at 17. I started working in radio. And so I liked hanging out with the guys in gray hair. You know, they had really good stories about, you know, the days way back when. But a lot some aspect of recovery was part of their life. So I had a chance to kind of mm-hmm. see them after the storm, as it were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
mm-hmm.
young guys I was coming up with, some of them were going a little off the rails. So I was kind of seeing an A-B comparison, if you will, you know, before and after. And I just got to the point I was like, you know what? I'm seeing kind of where things could go, and I'm just not going to go do that. But I do think it does call upon you to say how much of this is just built into your DNA, you know, which some people it is, you know.
Absolutely.
So are you working on anything right now, or are you kind of taking a little break, or what you have going on?
I'm on a little break right now. I just worked on recently a show called Tracker that's coming out in a couple days. And that was really fun. Just a little guest star on that. And yeah, just things in the works, but not solidified yet. So can't talk about them. But
well, how are you spending your time though? I mean, now that you don't have schedules to be on? Is it just relaxation, or do you have things like, I've been meaning to do this thing?
Totally. Well, I'm working on a lot of writing. I have a writing partner, my friend Taylor Hill. Her and I write together, and we're working on a comedy, like a two female best friends, parallel world type thing. So we're working on that and hopefully trying to get that made. And other than that, you know, auditions here and there, some meetings, and lots of getting outside in nature. Recently, I moved to a little more like of a forested area in BC, near in Vancouver. And I'm just kind of getting outside and enjoying the nature and kind of getting more into the rain. It rains here a lot. It's the Pacific Northwest, so it's like constantly a downpour. And I'm just, I think I'm finally really enjoying the rain and all the greenery that it causes. I've also really been enjoying traveling. So my partner and I, we went to Europe and traveled around there, visited my family in Bosnia, which was super fun and like interesting to have him, to have him integrated into like my family, my grandma.
Oh, so you still have a good connection to Bosnia, and you had a lot of family that was left there.
I do, yeah.
I think when you left, wasn't that right about the, I mean, I'm not totally sure of the timeline.
It was right like when the war was
during
starting.
During the war, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So I have a lot of family that stayed, and I have a lot of family that left. There's, you know, I have family in Italy and in Germany, and I think there's some people in Australia even, and it's interesting, the diasporic community and then the people that stayed. There's like a real difference of culture, right? Because the kids are growing up in different places. So,
now, how old were you when you left again?
I was 3, so I was quite young.
Do you have any echoes of memories of that time at all? Or
not really, not much. I actually do remember being in Serbia and my grandpa taking me to a play. I think it was a puppet show. And I remember it really stuck in my head. And then he bought me a book on like performances, like puppetry.
Really?
So, yeah. And I think of that now and I'm like, wow, I think I was already drawn to, you know, this sort of entertainment-y performer world. But yeah, I really enjoyed going back to the Balkans and traveling through Croatia and Montenegro and Bosnia. And I think that area of the world's...
Coastal, like Croatia is somewhere I would love to go.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I mean, Anthony Bourdain was kind of my spirit animal. And I remember him going to Croatia once.
Best.
I was like, wow. That was like, that looks like the coastal, you know, that episode, he actually fell over. He had too much wine to drink. It was just hilarious. It was a great episode, but it was like, I had no idea what a beautiful, beautiful place. Because I guess it's framed in my mind from years ago of being a place where war was happening. And
absolutely.
I'm sure kids these days will look at Ukraine the same way, you know. And
oh, God, yeah.
As I was kind of putting some things together, just doing, I don't like to overly research when I chat with somebody because I'm going to forget to ask you a question or something. But we looked at, I think, your Instagram. And did you road trip through Texas by any chance? I saw you had a...
I did. So I worked on a show called... Yeah, I worked on a show called Big Sky. And we filmed that in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I lived there for about 8 months. And during the weekends, my husband and I would travel around. So we went into Texas. We visited some of the national parks in New Mexico. And New Mexico, by the way, so underrated, I think. A lot of people think, when they think Albuquerque, they think Breaking Bad. And that's like where they stop, you know? But there's such... It's such a cool landscape, and for me, I really love Westerns, so all I could think about was Cormac McCarthy and, like, you know, people on horses and, like, just...
You're the second guest I've had that mentioned him.
Oh, really?
Garrett Dillahunt mentioned him before as somebody that was either influential or you really liked. So I got to
check out
this guy's stuff.
Oh, you have to, yeah. He's incredible.
And I'm going to make a note here. Yeah.
You should.
You know, it's so funny. I'll speak with somebody like, you got to read this book or you got to check this thing out. And I'm like, oh, absolutely. I'll write it down and I'll misplace the paper I wrote it on.
Are you into Westerns? Do you like sort of the deserty vibe?
You know, I'm not necessarily a big, big Western person, but if there's a good story behind it, I find that I can like any genre. If there's good story, it's either well acted or there's, you can, if it's a book, you can disappear into it and you can kind of, your mind's eye can kind of see it, you know,
of if course. That makes sense. I think you'll start to enjoy the genre more if you check him out, because I wasn't a big Western fan either. And then once I started reading him, I definitely changed my mind. He added a richness that I hadn't thought of before and a depth that I was like, wow. So I think you'll enjoy.
Well, Big Sky is one of the shows, and there's so much stuff out there that I really want to check out that I just, with guests I have on, I want to make sure I'm watching some of their stuff.
Oh, God, you can't watch everything. That'd be crazy.
But Big Sky is one. Is Kylie Bunbury, is that her name?
Kylie Bunbury, yeah, somebody. She was one of the leads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything she's in, and oh, she was great. In the show my daughter liked, where she was a pitcher, major league pitcher, and she really liked it. And so whatever she shows up in, I really enjoy.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
God, she was in, was it Game Night?
Game Night. That was a great movie. I loved that film. That was really
again
fun.
That kind of comedy. You can kind of get lost. I don't know why they don't have those movies as much. Maybe you're a writer.
Know.
Maybe you can write something like that.
Yeah, seriously. I'm definitely, edging towards comedy for sure when I'm writing. It's also just it feels the best to write. You know, when you're writing a drama and you're getting into the nitty gritty and getting into these dark scenes, you don't feel good after. But when you're writing a comedy, especially if you're working with someone, you're just laughing the whole time and you have a good... You have a good day for the rest of the day.
You know, I've played around just for fun writing screenplays. I don't know. It'd be nice if one would sell. I've never put one out there, but it's just fun to me. It's cathartic or whatever. But it really helped me appreciate the casting process more, because as you're writing it, you really get a sense of the aesthetic of the character and everything. And it makes you feel better when you go audition for something and don't get it. And I'm like, I just wasn't the person they imagined, you know, or the director interpreted, you know. But I could see where you really get involved in it, you know, because you're thinking aesthetics, the scenery, where are they, what are they doing, you know, what's around, you know, you really kind of submerge yourself almost like a daydream, if you will.
A happy daydream.
So are you, you know, your goal maybe in the next year or two, are you wanting to put a TV show out there, or, you know, is that kind of the destination for you?
I would love to put a TV show out, but I think it's a lot harder to make a TV show than it is to make a movie. So I think I'd probably start with a feature and then, you know, work my way towards something like that. I'd love to just work in comedy again in general. But I'm kind of open to everything. Whatever comes my way, as you know, with acting, it's kind of not always so up to us, and you got to kind of chase the opportunities that come your way. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I don't want to like put anything definite out there, but in terms of my own work, definitely something comedic, probably a movie would be really fun.
Yeah,
to
I do have to finish Mismatch. We started watching it last night, my kids, my two of them are in college in New Orleans right now, but one is with me. You know, he loves a TV show. The Rookie on ABC.
The Rookie.
So we're going to go watch it. And so we were watching your film. It's like, oh, Rookie's coming on. I got to watch it. Debut for the season.
Oh, yeah. You got to go to the thing you love. Yeah.
So we'll come back to it. But I really like the premise of it. I'm wondering if there are really people out there that do that thing of Mismatch where you go on test dates or trial runs of dates with people to kind of... Was that already a thing? I didn't know about.
I don't think it's a thing. I think they were kind of going for like a female Hitch type vibe. If you remember that movie with Will Smith,
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That's it. And so she's kind of like training men to go out on dates and helping them with that. And yeah, it was a cute movie. I had a lot of fun. I worked with this director Lucy Guest. She's also here from Vancouver, and we really clicked and became really good friends. So I made a lot of really great relationships on that film.
It seems like it's fun. Like I said, I've only gotten about 20 something minutes into it until The Rookie came on, but the beauty of streaming, it's always right there. So we're going to come back probably tonight, but I like the guy who, somebody who's speaking with you has a little control and they spit when they talk a lot. I was like, when that came up, it was just somebody I know who's going to remain nameless. I'll be very vague, but one of those people that is a close standing, you know, those people stand a little too close when they talk to you.
Wasn't there a Seinfeld character like that stood super close? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's if they definitely spit a lot like when they that. Talk, that's I've been in that situation good. Once before, and it's so uncomfortable. You don't want to make somebody feel bad about it, but it's like, you know, you're sitting there like, you know, wiping off going, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
One of the things I like to do, I want to ask my 7 questions.
It's Go for
just
it.
Some fun I like to do. But the first one, I'm a big food nerd. I mentioned Anthony Bourdain before. I'm a big food nerd. But I got to ask, what is your favorite comfort food? That thing that you just love, that like if you're having a bad day, you eat it, you'll feel better. Or you're having a great day, you're like, man, this is to help celebrate. I'm going to have my favorite comfort food.
I love spaghetti bolognese. That's like my favorite thing, like a homemade one, you know?
I think that's been mentioned 3 or 4 times, except that I talked to a Brit and he called it spag bowl. This is what apparently they call it in England. Yeah.
I should probably call it that, how much I eat it. I need to shorten my time.
I mean, it doesn't sound pleasant unless you know what it is. You know, it's like spag. He's always like a spag bowl. I said, what's a spag bowl? Oh, spaghetti bolognese. So you're not alone in that camp or in that tribe.
Oh, love spaghetti bolognese.
Now, if you are to sit down, let's say you're going to have coffee with 3 people, a few hours, sit down, talk story, living or not, who would 3 people be you would love to sit down with and chat?
Oh my gosh, that's a very hard question.
I know, I don't mean it to be hard, but it's funny because I spoke with someone the other day, Shoray Agdashlu, and she was like, who are your 3 people? I was like, shit, you know, I know he's ever asked me that before. I told her, I said, one of them is my grandfather who passed away. Cause I said, I'm getting to that age where I'd love to kind of like check in with him on certain things. You know, my kids are getting older,
just, that's beautiful. You know,
you don't know until you're older, the questions you haven't asked that you should have asked, but you didn't know to ask cause you're too young.
So
you know?
True.
I think I mentioned Alan Watts and it was one of them, but.
Oh, I love Alan Watts.
Yeah. Oh God. I used to, when I worked on the radio briefly in LA, I used to live in Encinitas, North County of San Diego. So I'd go to In-N-Out Burger, get a chocolate shake and drive south to head back home after I got off the air. Yeah. And I would turn, it was a Radio Pacifica or somewhere I didn't know who it was, but I'd listen to him every day driving back. And, but no, just one of those guys who just love to sit down and groove on, you know, life with, you know, talk. So,
oh my God, I love him. I used to listen to his lectures. Like I had that series of all his lectures and I would just listen to them over and over and over. Oh yeah. They're so good.
Well, his son just released something. It's an app. It's an Alan Watts app. It's got literally everything organized and it's, cool. It was, and I just, you're the only guest I've had that really knew who he was. So it's kind of, yay.
He's great.
Yeah, there's an app out there and his son, Mark Watts, put it together. And I don't know. He's one of those guys you listen to and go, yeah, I never really thought about life that way. You know? Live in the moment. There is no tomorrow.
Yeah, and he keeps it light. He keeps it very light and he laughs a lot. And he's a great guy. Actually, you know what? I'll go with Alan Watts for one of mine, one of my people.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for Oprah Winfrey. I just have loved her ever since I was a kid and watched her show with my mom, you know, every day after school. So definitely her. And maybe like Noam Chomsky. Just to learn a little bit more about the world. Yeah, I love him. And
he had a great quote the other day. I saw something that he's talking about AI. He said, AI is not a thinking thing. It's a plagiarism machine is what he called it. I was like, you know, it kind of is. Because it's not creating. It's just digesting and regurgitating.
Have you seen how good the videos are getting?
Scary. Somebody showed something last year, that video of Will Smith eating spaghetti. I mean, we've all seen it, which is just disturbing.
That one was terrible. Yeah.
And they show 1 year later. Now it's like indistinguishable. You know,
it's insane. It's insane. I'm terrified.
Yeah. And I live a lot in the world of voiceover and some people are like, it is kind of, you know, easy to replicate it. But I'm like, I said, the one thing I teach voiceover and I tell my students is, it's never, I don't care what anybody says. I know some people are like, well, you never know technology. It's never going to be able to be like an actor has emotion.
No.
And it can't make choices and reflect that through facial expression, body language. And so there's always going to be, and the moment, I don't know about you, but when I'm watching a YouTube video and I pick out, oh, that's an AI voice, I'm immediately out of it. It feels kind of like, I would rather read it. I don't need to have a computer voice talking to me. It's just, maybe I'm weird like that, but.
No, I agree completely. I think we all want a real authentic human. And especially when it's something artistic, we want to know that they felt what they were making, you know, that they came up with it, not some computer. So I'm with you there.
Well, can you imagine a movie that was written by AI? If I found that out, I mean, it may be interesting just from a pure curiosity standpoint, but not like, to have that be a norm or something. It's going to be the new toy everybody plays with for a while. And then, you know, totally. I don't know what's
going to happen. And I'm sure there'll be movies and songs and things like that that we'll love that'll be AI, but I think there'll be a limit to the amount that we allow it into our lives.
I think we love connection. I think we love instinctively authenticity, and that human desire, I think, is going to be the roadblock for AI to go beyond, you know.
Absolutely.
So Noam Chomsky and Alan Watts.
Noam Chomsky,
did you have third one
Oprah
of them?
Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey.
Alan Watts, yeah. Got Oprah in there. Yeah.
You know, she the arc of her career, yeah, me being younger, watching when she first started doing her show. And how she evolved it. Because when it started off, it was a little bit like the Phil Donahue show. It was not the Oprah Winfrey show that it evolved into. I mean, the first year or two. But she's definitely a self-made woman, without a doubt.
She's the best.
Now, if we were to go back and when you were young, Anya, who was your first celebrity crush that you looked at and said,
celebrity crush.
Was it somebody on the OC? No, because you had mentioned that.
Oh, I did love the OC. That's a good question. I don't know. I had a lot of posters up in my room. A lot of like...
Really? Okay.
J14. I don't know if you know that magazine. It was like a kid's... like
it's kind of like Tiger Beat or something like that?
Yeah, totally. And they had posters inside, and I'd always have them up on my walls. But probably like a first crush, maybe Shia LaBeouf. Because I loved Even Stevens. Yeah.
That's so, right. That, I forgot that he did that. Really yeah. Loved.
Yeah, he was great in that. He's a talented guy. So, yeah.
So Shia LaBeouf was the first. Now.
Makes sense. Yep.
Yeah, of the era. Yeah. I'm trying to think of who was popular when I was growing up. I think the original Beverly Hills 90210 I was in high school, though. I'm old, you see. I'm trying to remember way back when, like who was, you know. What was going on back then. But now, the next question I got for you, if you're going to, let's say, an exotic island, you're going to be living on it for a year, and you're not like a castaway. It's nice, maybe a resort, but it doesn't have internet. No streaming, no nothing.
Okay.
So you have to bring one DVD of a movie and one CD of an album. What would that CD and DVD be that you bring with you? Something you could watch and listen to over and over again.
Okay. I think for movie, maybe Grease. Grease is like one of my favorite films. I could probably watch that every single day and be happy with it.
Oh, I had a thing for Olivia Newton-John back in the day, so I'm there with you.
Oh, I had a thing for Kaneki. He was my crush sure. Maybe that was my first crush. Although it's so weird to think of like a grown man when you're like 10 watching something.
It was. Anyway. And I remember watching that thinking, I remember we were at the grocery store and my mother, we went to go get something and I'm walking through and I see a People magazine in the rack and talking about how Olivia Newton-John got married.
Yeah.
I was taken back. I was like, wait, you know, I had no concept of age at that point. I was like, if I have a crush on them, I'll meet them one day. And then, I'll, you know. Yeah. Such as the 7-year-old or 8-year-old mind, I guess.
I know. Okay, and then album. That's harder. Maybe like Hot Fuss by The Killers. That was one of my first favorite albums, and I still think it's a perfect album. So I'll go with that.
That was like, what was it? Like,
it's a long time ago.
That was early 2000s, roughly?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay. Yeah, it was.
I think I played some of that on the radio way back in my radio days, which are long gone.
You have such a radio voice. It's like, makes total sense. You were on the radio.
I've been accused of that. Now, the last thing I did was a syndicated show on ABC Radio.
I guess a podcast is similar.
Well, you know, that's the thing I missed about radio was not the playing of the music, because before, when the audience catches on to the song and they start loving it, you're sick and tired of hearing it because just you got to play it so much. And you're in the studio 4 or 5 hours a day. But no, when I had my show on ABC, that was like, I could talk with people. Like I had a retro show, which was a lot of fun. Talked like Rick Springfield and got any one of the people from the retro era. That was so much fun for me because that's who I grew up with. But I missed that part of it. I didn't miss other aspects of it. So I just did acting and voiceover, which is my main gig. And then I figure, well, the podcast will satisfy and scratch that itch of being able to talk to interesting, fascinating people from Canada.
Totally. I've been watching a lot of Frasier right now, and the new one is out.
Oh, the original
one's out, yeah, but I'm watching the original, and it's just such a good show. And I love all the radio bits in it. And you could totally do that. Become a psychologist.
Yeah, a lot of those are pretty accurate. Like, there's a lot of absurdity in radio. A lot of personalities that are just.
Oh yeah.
It's
the people that call in. I mean, that alone is like, whoa, who am I going to get today, you know?
There are some that are just heartwarming, like people like, oh, man, it's like every week I look forward to hearing you. And others, they call up going, thank God I don't live in the same city as they do, because this could get dangerous. Yeah, I mean, seriously. I've heard stories of stalker. I even had one stalker once, but that's a whole... Yeah, but he stalked everybody. I wasn't unique.
Your stalker didn't make you feel special.
Well, no. I remember I was... a helicopter. I flew in a helicopter doing traffic in Dallas when I was like 20 years old. And we landed in a place in a suburb called Arlington where they would refuel the helicopters. Well, there was they had a Dallas police helicopter landing and refueling in the TV station. So we had like two or three at any given time. And one of them was for another radio station. And that pilot walked over and we were just talking because I had to finish my last report and I got out and we were eating donuts and coffee and that early in the morning. And I found out we just had a conversation. We had the same stalker. And I'd found out another friend of mine, another radio station, had the same guy. He changed names. You know, he used different names to different people. He was really smart at finding out the hotline phone number at every radio station and calling and tormenting. And I was like, for a month, he found my home telephone number, would call me at all hours. And I was like, when I found out that he would call this guy Jim and my friend Trey, I was like, wait a minute. I'm not special. I'm not the one. I'm not the one. There are other people he's stalking. I felt like
I feel like that's a comedy movie right there. Like someone being scared of their stalker and then being like, "Wait a minute, why am I not the only one?"
And so I want to befriend him.
That'd
be
a great movie. Yeah, why not just me? Am I not good enough?
Well, there you go. There you go. I get a story by credit. It's your next project. Go for it.
That's so good. I love that.
But no, I mean, this guy would hear scary stories. I was 20 and I hadn't quite moved. I hadn't moved out on my own yet. And my father got really mad. He's like, why is this person calling at all hours? I was like, I got no control over this guy.
Oh, geez.
He was like a high school kid who just had a good game. He knew how to call up the new people at the station, scare them. Hey, I need a phone number of so-and-so. And somebody's like, yeah, okay, I'll give it to you. And so he got everybody's home phone number. So he was very well known around Dallas as circa 1990, 91, 92. No, about 93, I think is when it was. So anyway, sorry, I didn't go off the sidetrack there. But yeah, I had a stalker.
No, that was fascinating and scary.
But that is one of the things. I mean, there are some gnarly stories I've heard about. But it is the radio ecosystem back in the day was cool because you had a lot of personalities both on and off the air that made it interesting. We'll put it like, and Frasier is a great representation of that. You think somebody's cool on the air, they get off the air, they're a train wreck. Or somebody's mild mannered on the air and they or they're mild mannered in real life, but they go on the air and they're like boisterous. There's a movie from way back a long time ago called American Graffiti. And Wolfman Jack, this DJ, and there's a scene when Richard Dreyfuss walks in. And he's talking to this guy, and he doesn't realize that's the guy he's hearing on the radio. But it's two different personalities. But it's a great. Have you ever seen American Graffiti? You know, but that's an old movie. But now we know your album, we know your CD. But the next question is, if you were to find from the time you get up in the morning to the time you put your head down, you know, on the pillow at night, if you had a perfect day, what would be the component parts of that perfect day for you? The things you've done, experienced, or anything really.
I think my answer would be, I guess it would be something simple, like wake up without an alarm, go outside, have a nice walk with the dog, have some work to do, you know, probably go to set, work on some scenes, come home, have dinner, chill, watch a movie. I think sometimes the things that seem boring are actually the best.
What everybody says, you know, more than one person has, I mean, I'd say at least half have mentioned coffee being the first thing, making coffee in the morning. I was speaking with Billy Magnuson, and he said the ritual of making coffee in the morning. I'm like, yes, that's a thing. Like, grind my beans, do the thing. That's, for me, the way, you know.
Totally.
And I'm out of beans, so I didn't start my day like that, so I feel a little off. But anything else in there, are you, you know, as far as hobbies or activities you like to do?
Yeah, I mean, I love to read. I love to just, like, I'm exploring lots of different movement in my life, so I want to take up maybe some martial arts. Yeah, I'm thinking about Taekwondo or something like that, just to A, be able to defend myself, but also just challenge myself in a way. And I kind of like that they have all the belts that you have to earn and stuff, and it kind of gives you something to focus on. I think that's really cool. But I think trying new skills and trying a new thing and learning something is always a good day for me. You know?
Yeah, because as you get older, it becomes a little bit of seductive just to go with a thing that's comfortable and routine, and it's kind of nice to break it up.
It is, and to challenge yourself.
I was thinking about that, like the Tai Chi or yoga was a thing. Just to stay limber, you know.
I
keep telling me that's on my agenda. I still want to do that just to be limber, and people I know that are into it seem to be healthier generally.
Have you done yoga before?
Unintentionally.
My back hurts. I have to do this stretch.
But I did a thing. I was in a car accident years ago, and they were talking about I had some herniated discs, and they said, well, they showed me different exercises. Yeah. Like I remember doing a couple of them thinking generally, I feel looser in other places too. So I need to do that.
You should.
I'm going to write a little note here. Yoga.
Yoga.
I got to put that on my little daily, my notepad of things to do for the day, put at the top.
Maybe you need to sign up for a class.
I do.
My husband isn't very into yoga, but I signed me and him up for a class that's once a week. And it's super simple. It's yin yoga. So it's much more of like a deeper stretch yoga. You don't sweat as much. It's more like a deep stretch. And he really loves it. And it's new for him, but he's enjoying it. So I think, maybe if you push yourself to sign up.
Well, one of the reasons I told my kids that I wanted this destination to live on this island is I got the beach 600 feet that way, I think. So I can just go,
cool.
I got the beach like right there. So I can go out, walk every day, get some exercise. Yeah. And it's so nice. I just think it's being active becomes more and more like you become aware of it, because you can be, if I find myself being I've been sedentary for a lot of the time lately. So I need to get out and move.
Totally. It's so easy to be.
Well, you mentioned, having a dog. I had a wonderful golden retriever almost exactly a year ago passed, and my heart's still broken, but we're starting to think about a puppy now.
Of course.
Oh, but thank you. No, but I realized that having a dog keeps you far more active as well. Just that simple thing of getting out walking a few times a day. Going on adventures
absolutely
with your dog.
Absolutely, it does. I love it.
Now, did you bring your dog on your road trip?
I did. Yeah, we did. He lived with us in New Mexico, and he was still a puppy then. So it was kind of his first home. And the first time he saw snow.
I think you put a picture on your Instagram of him, I think, when he was sleeping or something.
I did. He's super cute. His name's Ollie.
Oh, he is a cutie. He is a cutie. I'm a big dog person.
Me too. I love dogs so much. I've wanted a dog ever since I was a kid. We never had one growing up. So having one now is just, it's a dream. I am so obsessed with him. It's like too much. I'm that person. I try to keep the pictures to a minimum, but I definitely like internally am just so obsessed. It's so cool to live with an animal.
Nope. I say post all the pictures you want. Dog people get it. With my golden, he would be in the studio with me
every
day. Yeah,
that's
true. I think I took it harder than even my kids did. I know it wasn't. They grew up with him from the time he was a little puppy, and I wanted them to have a dog, but I was realizing he was only 10, which is kind of young, in my experience with dogs.
That is young.
But
and goldens are so lovely. They're
puppies their whole life, but they're also
the
very, very noble and very intelligent, smarter than me in many regards. He was.
And beautiful.
Oh, yeah. The only downside, and there's not really a downside, just something you have to prepare yourself for when you have a golden, is you need a really good vacuum cleaner. They shed like crazy, Anybody has a golden is going to be like, hell yeah. It's just, we're moving and he's passed. We're still finding somehow their little bits of his hair have shown up here 700 something miles away.
My gosh.
So it's, anything that's I have
funny.
Some components of my studio sound booth that rely on some in the corners like Velcro. Mm-hmm. There are little bits of his hair they caught in the Velcro.
Yeah. I'm sure there's hair in there forever. You'll never get that out. That's the glitter that you get from the dogs.
Puppy. Yes, indeed. Now, the last couple of questions I got for you is, if you weren't doing this, if you weren't on camera, enjoying writing, doing the thing creatively you're doing, what else would you be doing? Could you see yourself doing?
That's a good question also. I think when I was little, I would have answered marine biologist because everybody I know wanted to be a marine biologist for some reason. But I think now, if I could already have like the credentials behind me, I think I'd want to be something connected to like space or like astronomy or something to do with just, you know, what's out there.
That's very cool. I mean, there's a lot of wonder out there. There's a lot of, you know, the unknown, yeah. Which makes it like cool contemplation, you know, but to actually, like you said, be credentialed. I spoke with Neil deGrasse Tyson some time ago last year, and I was like, what a cool job.
I saw that.
I just think that's such a...
He came to mind when I was just thinking that.
You know, here's somebody who studied the thing, but still has some aspect of wonder to it. And I'm like, what a cool gig, you know? And that's why I'm so infinitely jazzed to drive down to, it's called Boca Chica Park, is where, well, it used to be a park. It's, that's where SpaceX is located, or Starbase is the name of the place.
So cool.
Everybody I know, it's I haven't seen a launch yet because the last one happened right before we moved here. But they said you stand there and you actually can feel the vibrations in your chest of the rocket taking off. Like, how cool is that?
Wow.
But even when it exploded, you could hear, I've watched some video of it. People were like cheering because the explosion looked really cool. But I've been watching, I've been kind of nerding out. There is a... I'll give him a free little plug here. It's called WAI. What about it? I think there are these guys that follow what's going on. And I'm kind of learning about the whole SpaceX ecosystem through these guys on YouTube.
So cool.
And they're talking about what's going on. And I can go out my door, drive, my daughter and I take a drive, and I'll see, we have to cross a bridge to get into what's called Port Isabel. And we're driving over the bridge. You can see the launch tower, the, you know, the lights that blink, you know, for aircraft, you know, it's cool. I mean, I kind of nerd out on it. I turn into a kid all over again about anything space. But hey, you never know. Maybe one day plan when you know they're launching. They said that eventually they're going to get to, I think, 12 launches a month, which is just going to be crazy cool. So
that's really cool.
So would you ever be an astronaut, though? Would you, if you were given the opportunity and somebody said, you can go on our next space station we're launching for 3 months, would you do it?
It's funny because I was gonna ask you that, and I don't know if I'd have the guts. I think that is, those people are so brave to just go out and deal with no gravity and float around and drink their water in those weird droplets. I don't know how the human body can even be there. I don't understand it. I don't want to be there.
Yeah, I would do it just because
I'm
in a phase, like if I was younger, I'd be like, well, I got kids. I want to make sure, you know, they're growing up. Now I'm in a phase of my life.
Right.
I just turned 50 last year, and I was like, you know, I want life experiences. Mm-hmm. If somebody offered me that opportunity and it was legit, you know, and it was like, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Carpe diem, you know, I might as well do it. But you're right. I also, on the other end of the scale, I have a lot of appreciation for convenience and just something as simple as the showering, which you can't do. You're just kind of giving yourself a towel bath every day.
No.
I think after a while, I don't know how those people were up there for like a year plus, you know.
How do like the organs function? How is anything working? I don't understand. How is the blood moving? I don't get it. I don't understand. It can't be good for you.
I mean, you have to have a certain amount of exercise every day, you know. But you know what?
Yeah.
You know, actually, a little nerd note for you. And I guess you would, the only guest next to Neil deGrasse Tyson, the only guest that would really appreciate it. I found out that they said that your circadian rhythm, your clock, is based on 24 hours down here because, you know, 24 hours on Earth. But when you go into space, your circadian rhythm recalibrates to 24.9 hours a day, which is the rotation of Mars. So that's why some of the people theoretically are going, it's possible we came from Mars, you know. And so you hear people talking about stuff like that, it just kind of adds a little wonder in there, like, why, when you're in space, would you adjust? I don't know how accurate that is. It's fun to contemplate, but
did you see that NASA discovered another planet that's like 7 times bigger than Earth? And it has water, and basically, what is that about? That's insane. How are we not all talking about that? Screw Mars. Yeah, like, let's go there. What are we doing?
I told you I was speaking with Shohreh Aghdashloo. Did you ever see the TV show The Expanse, by any chance?
No, but I know of it. I know of it.
Oh, yeah. You must. Okay, I'm telling you, that's got to be on your reading. I told Neil deGrasse Tyson that. He said it was on his list of things to watch, but he hadn't watched it because we were talking about which movie got it mostly right when it came to sci-fi. And I think he mentioned The Martian with Matt Damon.
Cool. Yeah, I heard they did a great job.
But this, it's like a realistic view into the future. You know, what 200-300 years would we be doing? You'd have people who have colonized Mars, but you'd have people living in the asteroid belt because they do the mining and stuff. So you're starting to look at human nature and culture shot through the lens of something sci-fi. And it seems so plausible. It doesn't really seem like sci-fi. It just kind of is like, what if, you know? Anyway. I don't know if I've ever nerded out besides talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson, but there you go. It's a little bit of my nerdness for you.
No, that's fun. I'm getting more into sci-fi.
It is so well. It's well written. The ensemble, the cast. I think it's so well. It's everything about it so well done. And season to season, and it's based off a book. So some of my nerd friends are like, "But did you read the books though?" You know, I was like, "No, I'm too lazy for that."
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, this show's enough.
But, you know, if you had the opportunity, you'd be working in astrophysics and in that ecosystem. That's very cool.
Oh, God, yeah. That would be fascinating. I mean, I don't know if I have the smarts for it, but if I could have the smarts for it and the credentials, that would be it for sure.
You know, that's the thing that held me back, math. You know, so
math is so hard. Math is the worst.
My daughter, like one of them, is talking about trigonometry and all that. And I don't want to let on how dumb their dad is when it comes to math. There's a certain point where, like, I ask him, "Do you need any help with that?" And they almost want to pat me on the head, like, "Oh, bless your heart. You know, you're not going to be able to help me." You know.
But math is one of those things that once you lose track of where you are and the teacher is moving ahead, you're kind of screwed. You know, so.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Pretty much that you defined every math class I was in from the time I was in ninth grade. You know, it's like, okay, I can't hit pause or rewind. It's just moving forward.
Yeah, and they're not gonna.
Yeah, no tutoring is gonna help this disaster area, but
too far gone.
The last question I got for you: if you were to jump in a DeLorean, go back in time, and you travel back to when you're 16 years old, and you have a piece of advice, you have a moment with yourself. To either put yourself on a better or a different track you think would be great, or to make your moment at 16 a little bit better. What would that advice be for younger Anya?
I think it would be, don't be so hard on yourself. I think when we're really young, we're always trying to like be adult also and like figure everything out. And I think I was just really hard on myself. And I think that's the advice I'd give any teenager is just, you are who you are. You're trying your best. You'll figure it out. Don't stress so much about the future. You know, chill out. Chill out a bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, don't have the wisdom at that age to realize this too shall pass. You know.
Yes, just that even. So simple, right?
Yeah, if you knew it at that age, it would make so many things so much easier. There's a friend of mine who he's an acting coach.
Yeah.
And he has a book called "If You Survive Seventh Grade, You Can Act," I think is the name of it. I know I'm mangling up my, you know, the name of it, but that idea, the awkwardness, just everything going on in that moment. If you knew for a fact things are going to get better, it's not a big deal, you know. Oh, that would be so much. But you're living in an opposite world where everything's like dramatic, you know.
Oh, God, yeah, especially at that age.
But you know, I so appreciate you taking time. You know. Spending some time with me today. It means a lot. It's so much fun. I enjoyed chatting. And so nice to know there's another space nerd who likes Alan Watts out there in the world. It makes me feel good.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Hopefully we'll have a chance to connect down the line. Anything I can do for you down the line, any new projects when you come out with that movie about, the stalker, the radio stalker. I want to be sitting in the theater eating popcorn going, I know where she got that idea from.
I'll make sure you're there at the premiere. Yeah. Straight to offer.
Well, you have a wonderful rest of your week, and hopefully we'll have a chance to catch up soon.
Thank you, Mark. This was lovely to chat.
And hopefully we'll see you down here for a launch one day.
Sounds wonderful. You know I'm going to dork out if I can come. Okay, bye.
All right, there you go. Anya Savchich. Really enjoyed chatting with her. A fellow nerd. I dig it. Make sure if you haven't done so already, check out Louder Milk on Netflix. A great show. Always enjoyed Ron Livingston. Whatever he's selling, I'm buying. Love Ron Livingston. Of course, Anya is in the new movie, Ricky Stenicki. Great movie. I'm going to check it out with my daughter, Emma, tonight. When she gets back home from work, we're going to sit down and get a little comedy on. And if you would, do me a small favor, by all means, head to storyandcraftpod.com. All the socials are on there. You can link and leave a comment, whatever have you. But if you would do me the favor of giving a review, just a following, if nothing else, that way you get notified every time a new episode rolls out. I love you being here. It means a lot to me. And thanks so much for shooting me some notes, checking in while we were on hiatus, doing the big move and getting set up here. That's it from the beautiful sunny beaches of South Padre Island that are currently loaded with spring breakers. So I'm going to go out and, you know, grab a beverage and watch the mayhem. Oh, to be young again, right? Okay. Have yourself a great one. Thank you again for being a part of Story and Craft. Love you being here. And I look forward to connecting with you very soon, right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.